welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the political cesspool radio program. It is Saturday evening, November 21st, and no matter how many shows we do, I never tire of bringing another live installment of this award-winning show to you each and every Saturday night here from our home studio, our home base, our headquarters, AM 1380, WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. That's the flagship, as you know, but we go out as well to the AM-FM affiliate stations of Liberty News Radio Network across the country at libertynewsradio.com. We're on the internet as well at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Don't forget satellite as well and the Liberty News Wire. We're happy to be with you tonight. Happy Thanksgiving early from us here in the Political Cesspool. Very wondrous and joyous season. We're about to be entering into the Thanksgiving and Christmas season. You'll notice that I didn't say holiday season. It is not a holiday to me. It's something much more spiritual than that. Thanksgiving, a great Christian and certainly a holy European-American holiday. And then, of course, Christmas, which is the creme de la creme, and that's something that all of us should very solemnly celebrate. Not solemnly, I don't guess, but obviously you want to have a great deal of reverence for Christmas and not get into the hubbub of Santa Claus and all that other fun stuff. It's fun, but it's not the meaning of the season, the reason for the season. We'll talk more about that as we get into it, though. But Thanksgiving, of course, will be coming up this Thursday, so we won't have a time to talk to you again until next Saturday, after which, of course, Thanksgiving will have already passed. So in case we forget to tell you later on in the broadcast, happy Thanksgiving to you from your friends and family here at the Political Cesspool. That being said, my good friend and I guess de facto member of my family, certainly my a brother if there ever was one, Keith Alexander, joining me in studio tonight. Keith, we've got a very busy show.
I tell you, I look forward to it every week. And
it's the highlight of my week.
I'm looking forward to this so-called holiday season where we, quite frankly, you know, it doesn't end on the 25th of December, everybody. You know, you've got New Year's and then you've got the 12 days of Christmas. So it ends on January the 6th. And I expect everybody at the Cesspool will be celebrating right up to the last minute. And I encourage all of our friends and listeners out there to do the same. Let's remember the reason for Christmas. And it's a 12-day festival, not a one-day festival.
And Keith, thank you for giving us that little tidbit of information. And as I said, as Christmas draws closer over the course of the next couple of weeks, we will be doing a biblical series on the Christmas season. We'll do our annual reading of the gospel from the book of Luke. It's always a fun time here in the cesspool, but that is for a later program, not tonight. Tonight, Keith, I tell you, we're not going to have a guest tonight. I know people are used to an endless parade of celebrity guests on this radio program, the absolute elite of the alternative right movement on this show featured each and every week. But we have got a stack of material so thick it looks like old Morris Deese's divorce decree. We've got a lot to cover this evening, and we are going to do it without wasting a single minute. And with that being said, Keith, we're going to do a little movie review for the audience to get things kicked off this evening. We found a movie that we think everybody in our audience should see, right, Keith? Why don't you lay it out for them?
Well, it's based on a local story here in Memphis. It's called The Blind Side, and it's a Hollywood rendering of a novel by a fellow named Michael Lewis, who was a fellow student of Sean Toohey. Now, if these names sound strange and obscure to you, that's only because they are. But let's bring this out. They're apparently lionizing this because it apparently fits right into a typical liberal parable that they just cannot wait to drill into the heads and minds and hearts of white Americans everywhere, and particularly the young. Now, what it's about is there was a certain fellow named Sean Toohey. Toohey grew up in New Orleans, went to Isidore Newman High School, which is the same high school, private high school, by the way, and very expensive, that the Manning boys went to, Peyton, Cooper, and Eli, when their father, you know, who played for the New Orleans Saints, who lived in New Orleans in what's called the Garden District, and this school is there. Well, Toohey's father had been a legendary coach there, but he died suddenly, and Sean was still a student. So somehow it was worked out that Sean got a scholarship the rest of the way through, and I guess through his genes, had some good athletic talent, went on to play basketball at Ole Miss in the early 80s, where he met his wife, the former cheerleader at Ole Miss, Leanne, who's now Tui. Her father was a U.S. Marshal, grew up in comfortable middle-class circumstances. Sean used his Ole Miss connections well, apparently, and got at least a part interest in the Taco Bell franchise in the Memphis area, which is a moneymaker if there ever was one. You know, that grade D ground beef, you know, one step above animal consumption to human consumption. I think it's about the lowest level that you can have fit for human consumption, so they make a lot of money. The food's cheap. There are a lot of poor people in Memphis, so Taco Bell is definitely going to do a lot of business, and they have, and he's become a wealthy person. Now, Tui, for some reason, if you read the book Blindside, he's got some type of a chip on his shoulder about the Memphis society set. And he wanted to be a big fish in a smaller pond. So rather than sending his son to MUS or CBHS, he went to Briarcrest Christian, which is James's alma mater, a very good fundamentalist school. But, of course, it's one of those fundamentalist schools that would like to forget its origins. It was begun in the early 70s as a segregation academy. Is that an accurate statement, James?
Absolutely accurate, Keith. It was started as Briarcrest Baptist School System. They operated out of numerous Baptist churches throughout the Memphis area. Founded in 1973, they went under some financial duress in the late 1980s, which is when I was there. From started about 1986, 87, I guess, in kindergarten, went all the way through ninth grade. I left Briarcrest in 1995. But they restructured as Briarcrest Christian School, and the rest is history. And it is, you know, now $10,000 a year just to go to grade school there. It's one of the most elite schools in the Mid-South.
Well, what's happened with all of these schools, private schools, in a place like Memphis, and I'm sure there are other places like it, New York, Detroit, New Orleans, you name it, that have large minority populations, the people that run these private schools know they've got people over a barrel. That you just don't have the option of sending your kids to a public school. So,
well, you're quite right, Keith, and this is something that
they can charge whatever they want to, and that's one of the reasons for those big fees.
Well, and you've mentioned this several times in the past when talking about private education. Private education, for all intents and purposes, did not exist before busing and forced integration manifested itself in the late 60s, early 70s. This was something, as you've said, Keith, if you went to a private school, you were either a problem child or a Catholic. Public education in the United States was the top of the world back in the 1950s. And
yeah,
so
right.
There's no coincidence that all of these Christian schools
were definitely public schools, like Central High School in Memphis.
Yeah, now it's just like going to Mogadishu. But all of these private schools came into existence in the early 1970s, and there's no coincidence for that.
Not all of them, but let me say this. Every one of them either was created, was founded in the early 70s, in reaction to what was called Plan Z, the busing order, which basically put the final nail in the coffin of public education in Memphis, or if they existed previously, they experienced a quantum leap in the size of their enrollment.
Right. Well, yes, certainly there have been more private schools that have come into existence since the 70s, but there are a great number of them that came into existence in a matter of a couple of years.
Well, whatever it was, let me say that there would not be a prosperous private school association in Memphis. There would not be all of these private schools were it not for racial integration of the schools. And, you know, that may be shocking for some people to hear, but as it says in the Bible, the truth will set you free.
And we're doing a long build-up to the, idea of what this movie's all about.
The point we're trying to make with this is that anybody, including the Tuies, that sends their children to private schools in Memphis, they may protest they're doing it for non-racial reasons. But the truth of the matter is, they're doing it for racial reasons. They don't want their children going to a ghetto school, which are the options or the alternatives to private education. Of course, poor white people tend to opt for homeschooling. And that's, you know, those are the two options, homeschooling or private schooling. And basically sending your kids to the private schools in Memphis is like throwing them into the black hole of Calcutta.
Well, Keith, we only have 25 seconds. We're really setting the table lavishly for what we're going to be talking about in the next segment about this movie, The Blind Side, which...
Tuis sent their children to to private schools. Like they sent to Briarcrest.
Wait, 1 second, Keith. We gotta go to break. We're gonna come back and talk more about this when we return. How Briarcrest plays in this private Christian academy plays into this movie, The Blind Side, which is a major Hollywood release coming out, I believe, this weekend. So we're really gonna cut to the chase when we get back. Sit tight, everybody.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be...
Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Thank you, Art Frith. Yes, indeed, I am James Edwards. You're back in the Political Cesspool here on Liberty News Radio, AM 1380 WLRN Radio. In Memphis, it's Saturday evening, November 21st. I'm joined by Keith Alexander, and we open the show tonight with the intention of explaining this movie, The Blind Side, a major motion picture featuring Tim McGraw and Sandra Bullock. It comes out, hits theaters across the country this weekend. The story originates right here in Memphis, Tennessee, at my old high school, Briarcrest, the school I went to through ninth grade before I went into homeschooling. And before we get into what this movie is all about, we are methodically setting the table for you so you'll understand why these private Christian academies specifically came into being, many of which back in the early 1970s, and also why it is in this day and age akin to child abuse to send your kids to public schools where they will either be accosted by multiculturalism or receive, at best, a very substandard education. But bringing it all back into context and then leading up to this movie that we're here to talk about, Keith Alexander, why don't you help us out?
Well, private school situation in Memphis is a perfect example of a theory that has been explained at length by people like Kevin McDonald and Jared Taylor and Paul Gottfried and others, called implicit whiteness. This is an effort by white people who want to claim themselves to be liberals. So they want to talk integration, but they live segregated lives. And it's like a tightrope act. It's like the left side of the brain doesn't know what the right is doing and vice versa. And I'm sure that people like the Tuis, though, see the inconsistency between their public stance of being good liberals on one hand and, on the other hand, sending their children to an exclusive and a white public school. Of course, what happens in Memphis is, you ask, what happens to white people and their children who aren't wealthy? Well, they either move to the suburbs seeking the good public, translation, free school, or they homeschool. They don't have the options that the Tuis have. The Tuis have enough money to burn a wet show dog. That's portrayed in the movie. So consequently, they saw this inconsistency, but here is the big thing. See, Tuis is this typical jock father type figure, okay? People that have children going to private schools have probably encountered this guy. He's a type, or a guy like this. He's the type of guy that shows up at all the football practices and basketball practices and uses his status as a former Division I college athlete to kind of insinuate himself into the athletic program as a quote-unquote volunteer coach and things of that nature. So he's very much interested in Briarcrest rising to the top of the heap among the private schools and among schools generally in terms of their athletic program. So he spots this black kid who is huge and apparently is more agile and faster than the average guy who is as huge as he is. So the TSSAA, that stands for the Tennessee Secondary Scholastic Athletic Association, passed a rule to prevent private schools run by guys like, or athletic programs run by guys like Tuis or people with that mindset from cherry-picking all the best athletes in the public school system and giving them scholarships so they can play for these private schools. And basically the rule was this. If you attend a private school, tuition has to be paid. And if you, it has to be paid by either a parent, father or mother, or a very close relative like granddad or Uncle Fudd or Aunt Annie Mame or whoever. And if it's not, if some third party comes in and pays for it, then that kid can attend the school. He just can't play sports. And, of course, that was intended to scuttle the ideas or the plans of people like Sean Tuohy. But Sean Tuohy is a wealthy dude. And as a wealthy dude, he doesn't like hearing the word no. So he finds this kid, tries to get him in, finds out that there are things blocking his way. So he says to himself, well, I'll show them. I'm going to adopt him. Then I'm his daddy. Then I can pay his way to school. And he does that, has him move into the house, and while he's at Briarcrest, he apparently, you know, and quite understandably has trouble making the grade. He's right at the very bottom of the class. Well, Tuohy hires a full-time tutor, a full-time former Memphis high school teacher. That character is played by Kathy Bates in the movie. And
hell of an actor. Now, I like Kathy Bates. She's a good actress.
Well, she's from Memphis, too, by the way.
That's right.
And then, that's not enough either. They're still having problems. He's got a whole lot of F's on his report card. And Tuohy being a alum of Ole Miss and his wife being an alum of Ole Miss, remember, she was a former cheerleader, they say that they have no zeal one way or another, but I think it's probably a pretty safe bet to think that they would like this star athlete to go to Ole Miss. But he's having trouble making the grades to get in. Well, Tuohy, ever an expert in brinksmanship, finds that there is a system where you can substitute a bad grade on one of your core courses, like, let's say, algebra or whatnot, with a two-week correspondence course with this a program set up by Brigham Young University in Utah, where you can, for example, take a class in ethics, maybe get an A in it, and replace the F on your report card with an A. But the key to this is you have to have the kid diagnosed with a learning disability. Well, for Tuohy, that's no problemo. Okay, no problem at all. He finds a friendly psychologist or someone who comes in and sets this situation up. Now, the NCAA, you know, that governs collegiate sports, got a little bit suspicious about all of this, so they sent an investigator. In fact, it was a black woman, at least that's what it is in the book, to come out and question the Tuohys and see whether there's some hanky-panky going on here. Well, Tuohy apparently is very offended because he's just pure of heart. His hands are clean, his heart is pure, and he's just trying to help this poor kid. And how dare you try to get in the way of me doing this godly work? And so he's now cloaked himself and his wife in the mantle of being big civil rights heroes. And they're saving, quote unquote, this kid, you know, from a terrible fate, which may be the case, but it's obviously more than that, because if he's just interested in helping poor black kids, find one who's 4'11" and 100 pounds. Not one who is 6'5" and 344 pounds. But that's what they do. They get him to Ole Miss, and of course, once they get him in, it doesn't matter. Ole Miss has a player right now named Gerald Poe that didn't even qualify to get a high school diploma from a high school in Mississippi, rural Mississippi. He got a certificate of attendance, which is what I have a retarded cousin who got a certificate of attendance after he served 12 years in the school system. And that's basically the type of people that get certificates of attendance. Nonetheless, this had nothing to do with the TUIs, of course, but a former coach of Ole Miss, a guy named Ed Orgeron, who's now a assistant coach at Tennessee, he has
We gotta put the brakes on, buddy. We're gonna. You see where we're going with this, ladies and gentlemen. We're gonna finish it up when we come back right after this on the Political Cesspool. Stay tuned.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
With that intro being played, I would like to remind you that Jersey Boys is coming to the Orpheum Theater here in Memphis, Tennessee, January 27th through Valentine's Day, February 14th. That kind of music just makes you feel good on the inside. It'll make you see the world in a whole different perspective. It'll make you be hopeful. Right, Keith? And we're going to go to it, aren't we? We're going to have a cesspool night
We got to do that. In fact, we got to make sure that James doesn't go overboard and try to sneak back stage or something and winds up getting thrown in the jug or something because of his, just overwhelming attraction to the Four Seasons. You know,
I don't know how many people in the audience of the Political Cesspool know who the Four Seasons are, but if you don't, you should research them. That'll be
for a young guy, James. Let me tell you, James is totally. He has found his group. You know, other people like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or Elvis or whatnot. They're all rolled into one group for James, and that is the Four Seasons.
And let's not forget, we've had one of those founding members on this show. We've had so many people on this show over the course of the last 5 years and change. And anyway, that's a story for another day. But
James was ahead of the curve on this one. He dug the Four Seasons before Jersey Boys ever, was hatched in the fertile imagination.
Right. That's one that I called in advance. If I could just play the stock market that well, it'd be a whole nother ballgame for me. But anyway, listen, we've been talking about the movie The Blind Side exclusively during this first hour, and we think it's an important enough topic to warrant such a monopoly of our time here in this first hour. The movie The Blind Side, it stars Tim McGraw, Sandra Bullock,
Kathy Bates,
it chronicles the story of this black child who came from, as you might would imagine, a broken home. I think he had a drug addict mother and an absentee father, pretty stereotypical. And he was found, so the story goes, walking down the street during the middle of the winter in nothing but T-shirts and shorts. So Mrs. Toohey, the character played by Sandra Bullock, this is a true story, saw him, invited him to spend the night in the mansion that they live in here in Memphis, the Toohey's. And this is, of course, Mr. and Mrs. Toohey, the upper middle class. They're very wealthy, very elite, white
they're
Southerners.
They're poverty news, but they're very wealthy. They're
very wealthy,
Arab
white
estates,
Southerners.
As they say, newly so wealthy people.
They end up adopting this kid who, as Keith said, is very big football player, and he lives at their home, their mansion, with their two biological kids. They end up sending him to Briarcrest, $10,000 a year tuition for grade school. He somehow manages to graduate Briarcrest, which is a very hard school. I was there, never made a C on my report card, I'm happy to say. And he graduates Briarcrest, goes on to play for Ole Miss, which is obviously a college we've been talking about a lot recently on programs here in the Political Cesspool. And he now plays in the NFL for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, I want to digress here just for a moment because I was researching this story last night on the internet. And, Keith, we found something pretty interesting. This is absolutely self-serving to say this, but I got a kick out of it. Keith, why don't you tell the audience about it? Because I would feel embarrassed to do so myself.
Well, on the Wikipedia entry for Briarcrest Christian School in Memphis, it has down at the bottom a list of notable alumni. And listed there right along with Michael Orr, this football player that is the subject of the movie The Blind Side, is none other than James Edwards himself.
Of the Political Cesspool. So there I was. amongst, I think, the five most famous alumni who had ever gone to Briarcrest Christian School. I was right there with this NFL player, Michael Orr, we've been talking about. I was sandwiched between him and someone who at one time had met Oprah Winfrey in her life. That was another person that made the list.
Well,
but anyway.
The Tuies, I'm sure, are probably, you know, somebody's getting the smelling salts that they passed out if they...
To Briarcrest's entry and saw my name listed to that one. They'd be pretty excited, I'm sure. But, you know, I can tell you, had a great time at Briarcrest. Very good experience. I was also a student athlete there. Played basketball on the basketball team. I was the starting shooting guard. We were the only team, and, of course, an all-white team. We were the only team in the history of Briarcrest at any grade level. This happened to be my eighth grade year that went undefeated. We went 43-0, beating all of the inner-city public schools. Only team in the history of Briarcrest to go 43-0. I was a part of that team. My dad was the coach. My mother worked in the office, had great relationships with all the teachers there. My experience at Briarcrest was a very positive one, so it was interesting that this movie had a little Briarcrest element to it. But nevertheless.
But you didn't get to live with the Tuies.
No, I didn't get to live with the Tuies.
And you weren't adopted, right?
No. And my parents worked hard to send me there. And my brother went there, too. So that was $20,000 a year for us to go to school, just so we wouldn't have to get beat up in the public schools. But anyway, the point of it is this. We're talking about the movie The Blind Side, Keith. You know the nutshell version. Keith spent 30 minutes giving you all the background. I gave you a nutshell version of what the story's all about. Rich white Southerners adopt this black kid, send him to private school. He goes on to play for Ole Miss and now in the NFL. And, of course, he went to Briarcrest after I did, a few years after, as a matter of fact. But nevertheless, Keith, the question must be asked now, why are we spending so much time talking about this story? Why is Hollywood interested in this story? What's the subliminal message they want everyone in the audience to get out of this very major motion picture release?
Well, it's just like we say in our recent pamphlet, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society, which we're going to mention later in the show, too. Basically, Hollywood has been taken over by left-wingers. You know, the Hollywood left that Joe McCarthy and Richard Nixon and other people mentioned back in the 50s was not a figment of the right-wing's imagination. It accurately describes the people that run Hollywood, and they still run Hollywood. And they basically use the movies and choose scripts based on their ability to use them as parables for preaching and converting people to liberalism. In other words, they're going to make sure that this movie fits some type of liberal parable, bad white people, good black person, something like The Great Santini, or manly homosexuals like the movie Philadelphia, who lead normal lives, carping drifters, taking down some white authority figure, they always have that type of message. Something like the movie A Time to Kill, you know, where depraved white southern rednecks kidnap and rape and then lynch, no less, a young black girl.
That's got a time to kill.
That John Grisham story, A Time to Kill.
Another movie in which Sandra Bullock stars, by the way.
They found a vehicle in this movie.
Yeah, A Time to Kill is another movie in which Sandra Bullock stars. Kevin Spacey's in it too, great actor, but there has never been a more ridiculous Hollywood movie.
U.S. Department statistics show that white on black rape is one of the rarest of violent crimes. In fact, the official number per year is less than 10, which means that the actual number could be zero because less than 10 doesn't register. But of course, you know, the truth has never been any impediment to Hollywood's myth makers. And likewise, Hollywood jumped on this because it was a great liberal story. White people submitting to letting this superior black athlete share their lives, and they gave him all this money without a thought about the fact that their own kids don't have these opportunities to go and play for a place like Ole Miss anymore or to go to the NFL. They're going to bring him in, and they bought, the spin that was put on this, that this was done for totally altruistic reasons, that they were just being wonderful people. And, of course, they would like more white people to do this and neglect their own children in the process.
Well, and that is, I guess, the moral of the story. You can't be holy, you can't be good unless you've done something to improve a minority's lot in life. And there's nothing inherently wrong about doing things, doing good deeds for people outside of your family or outside of your race. Certainly there's nothing wrong with that at all. But as we've said time and time again on this program, the Greeks had an eternally wise statement: all things in moderation, even virtues when carried to an extreme, can be harmful. And certainly that's the effect on white society in America. You know,
would it have killed
these people to have adopted a poor white kid? I mean, certainly if they had adopted a
quality of result. In fact, that's what you that they're telling people, that if you're really a righteous person, you're going to step in and do something like the Tuohys did and make sure that these kids get benefits that most normal families, you know, they put their efforts and energies into their own offspring. But
well,
they like this idea
killed
of turning your, you know, diverting those resources to a minority group member.
They wouldn't have killed the Tuohys to adopt a poor white kid either, and they certainly exist. But then again, had they have done so, this wouldn't be a major Hollywood movie.
It certainly wouldn't be a movie, would it?
No, there would be no movie. But anyway, that's the gist of the movie. You know, we don't want you to go see it, but you should know what it's about. And because it takes place in Memphis at a school that I went to and spent some great years at, we thought it would be worthy of a lengthy dissection on this program. I hope you enjoyed our little movie review critique of The Blind Side. But, you know, that's the message. That's the message.
Another episode in there, too, that where
we got 7 seconds to break, Keith, but you can't be good unless you're benefiting everyone else but your own family. That's the moral of the story. Go see it if you like Sandra Bullock. We'll be back with more. We're going to shift gears when we return right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. We've really exhausted our commentary about the movie The Blind Side, but after I found out last night I was listed in the most famous alumni in the history of Briarcrest Christian School and Elite Academy, whose history stretches back nearly 40 years, I figured, well, we might as well spend an hour talking about it, because you don't get privileges or honors like that bestowed upon you very often. And, of course, the reason for me being listed on that compilation of notable alumni is because, no less than I am, the host of the Political Cesspool. So this show has opened up another door for me. I just wish there were some royalties associated with that, but unfortunately there are none. I got to read this letter to the editor.
Well, hey, don't worry.
I'm going to toss it over to Keith, but I got to read this letter to the editor about Ole Miss. We've been talking about Ole Miss and the cultural genocide that's been taking place at the campus of Ole Miss, and obviously that correlates with what we've been talking about, this movie, The Blind Side. This black kid went to Briarcrest, then to Ole Miss, then to the Baltimore Ravens, Michael Orr. But before we do that, Keith has a quick analogy related to the movie about the cowbird in the nest. Keith, if you will.
Yeah. The Blind Side is basically, when you strip it down, and the reason Hollywood has grabbed onto it is because it's a cowbird in the nest story. For those who aren't familiar with ornithology, a cowbird is a bird that follows either cattle herds or buffalo herds, and as a result, they can't return to the same nest where they lay their eggs every night, so they've developed an evolutionary strategy, apparently, of laying an egg. The female bird, cowbird, lays an egg in another bird's nest. This egg looks similar to the eggs of the other bird, that's why they choose them, but it's a little bit bigger and it usually hatches earlier. And the cowbird, once in the nest, squawks and fusses and makes such a noise that it gets a disproportionate amount of the resources. And the host bird, not knowing any better, goes ahead and feeds this chick, often to the neglect and detriment of its own offspring. In fact, what very often happens is that the cowbird raises such a fuss in the nest, which would be the equivalent of a house for people, that the bird's natural offspring fall out to the ground and perish, and this adult bird, continues to feed the cowbird until it flies off without a backward glance, and obviously not a very good evolutionary strategy, but this is the evolutionary strategy that Hollywood recommends for white people in America today.
And certainly, they laid that strategy on thick with the subliminal message found in this movie, The Blind Side. So that being exhausted, obviously Ole Miss correlates with what we've been talking about here, and we have been talking about, as I mentioned just moments ago, the cultural genocide there at Ole Miss, a great Southern institution, historically speaking, but now you can't bring the Confederate battle flag in there, you can't have Colonel Reb, you can't sing Dixie, you can't do anything that would be
reminiscent of the Old South and white pride.
Now, because of that, Ole Miss has taken some very unpopular stands in banning Confederate paraphernalia and banning freedom of speech there at the games and so on and so forth. We've talked about it repeatedly on this program over the course of the last couple of weeks. And because of those stands, there has been an outcry, an outpouring of dissent from Native Mississippians and Southerners in general against Ole Miss for these stands that certainly don't reflect the hearts and minds of the people who live in and around the campus. But there did happen to sneak through one letter to the editor in the Memphis Commercial Appeal, a.k.a. the Communist Appeal, and it goes to show why myself and people like me don't read the paper anymore. In
why
reading
newspapers
this,
tend to be dying and dwindling.
Well, because they cater to the far left, and they advocate a far leftist ideology, and because of that, your blood pressure boils, you get worked up, you get upset. So, you know, normally conservatives don't read the newspaper. But I happened to be reading it, and I saw this letter to the editor, and it absolutely made me incensed. And here's what it had to say, and I'm going to read it and let Keith provide commentary on it. Not all of us are for this tradition, so reads the headline. After reading the latest in a string of letters to the editor about my alma mater, the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, I feel moved to respond to the writers who are blasting the courageous actions of our new and great chancellor, Dan Jones. The theme of the letter seems to decry the fact that the university administration will no longer tolerate certain statements, symbols, or banners that the writers want to classify as tradition. Most of the letters call the act shameful and damaging to the university and its future. I want to speak out for those of us, and there are legions of us, he says, who support what the school is doing. The statements and symbols, the South shall rise again, the Confederate battle flag, Colonel Rebel, are not only racist and demeaning to minorities, we can't have that, but they are also demeaning to all of us who truly love our university. Those who call these things traditions do not truly love Ole Miss. They have an idealized version of what Ole Miss once was. And the saddest thing about it, so this writer says, is when 18 and 19-year-old Ole Miss students yell such things at athletic events such as the South Shall Rise Again, they are yelling them because they think it makes it cool. They have absolutely no meaning as to what their words say. No school in the nation has worked harder to attract quality students of all ethnic backgrounds. Diversity makes Ole Miss the wonderful place that it is. I applaud Dan Jones and hope that he continues the course so my university can be the best it can be. Ryan Byrne of Cordova, Tennessee, an all-white suburb, of course. Keith, your thoughts?
Well, it's typical Orwellian newspeak, as it says in the novel 1984 by Orwell. In other words, we're going to throw the old Ole Miss down the memory hole, and love is hate. The way to love Ole Miss is to hate the traditional Ole Miss. That's the message that they're sending, and I'm sure that for every letter like this that the Commercial Appeal Editorial Board got, they had 30 letters that were critical of Dan Jones and his efforts to basically have this purging of the old symbols of Ole Miss. But, of course, they create their own alternative universe. They print this one letter, and they try to give the impression to the readers that this is the typical and the prevailing viewpoint on these issues. Typical, and they wonder why nobody wants to buy their lying, conniving newspaper. That's why daily newspapers are going out of business across the nation. Any institution, a newspaper, a school, a church that embraces liberalism winds up declining and dying because liberalism is the modern face of evil. People realize this. They're certainly not going to pay to find themselves and their ancestors and symbols and traditions they like being abused and being they don't want to, you know, it's bad enough to have to subject to brainwashing. They're certainly not going to pay for it, so they end their subscriptions just like you did. The only way that James reads the newspaper, ladies and gentlemen, is when he finds a free copy lying around somewhere.
That's right.
He's kind of like the conservative version of Jerry Rubin, you know, the hippie. He wrote a book called Steal This Book. James will steal his newspaper.
Yeah, thank you for absolving me of the guilt that would come from having supported such a paper.
Right, but see, you know, you read these things, and all it does is remind you why you stopped your subscription in the first place.
Oh, it made me hot, baby. I'm telling you, it made me hot on Wednesday when I read this one. But and, of course, his assertion that people who love and respect, rightfully so, the Old South, he dismisses them as having no idea of what their words mean. They're just doing it to be cool, as if doing that makes you cool in today's politically correct climate. And to dismiss them as ignorant inbreds, you know, it's just more typical pseudo-intellectual liberal speak.
And there are people out there that think that somehow they're going to divert the attention of the voracious cultural Marxists from changing the name of the school from Ole Miss to something more politically correct, like the Marxist-Leninist Institute of Mississippi, for example.
Well, you know, and what
or,
gets me...
Hey, changing the name of the team from Rebels to maybe the Ole Miss Homosexuals or something, something more of politically correct. But those people are living in a dream world.
Well, what gets me, Keith...
The left is never going to give up until they plowed under every aspect of the old society and culture.
Well, what gets me, Keith, is that the guy who wrote this letter, and of course he's a pseudo-intellectual, he has no idea what he's talking about, I would have given him a little bit of credence, at least for following his convictions, if he had written the letter from Orange Mound. But no, he writes it from an all-white enclave, Cordova, Tennessee. You know, and that comes as no surprise whatsoever.
See, black kids don't care about this, okay? And most black people don't. They see colleges like Ole Miss or Tennessee or the University of Michigan or whatnot, not as some end in itself. They see it as the minor leagues of football and basketball. They have no more loyalty to Ole Miss than, for example, the normal St. Louis Cardinal prospect has for the Memphis Redbirds minor league affiliate. You know, that's basically what they consider college football to be and
Keith,
college basketball to be, the minor league affiliates for the NBA.
Keith, with that being said, we've got to just put the brakes on it. We had a half dozen topics for discussion to put into this first hour. We didn't get to any of them except for the blind side, but by God, we got it done in the right way.
We blindsided the blind side.
Yeah, we were blindsided by the blind side. We've got so much more to talk about. I don't know where the time goes, but we're out of it for this first hour. Still 2 hours to come, though, and I'll be here with you the entire duration. Sit tight. Keith Alexander, my friend, thank you for the excellence in broadcasting that you bring to this program. We'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned, everybody. The Political Cesspool returns right after these words.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.